The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding. Thank you very much for choosing to spend some time with me here this morning. I hope everybody had a wonderful Easter. I got a surprise. My niece that I have talked about, who's up working in Chicago now, who's the nurse, she and her boyfriend came down for... He's from Clinton, so this Kauai girl came out here and met a boy from Iowa, and they're still going strong. They've been together a couple years now. He's a real nice guy. He's a little bit older than she is. I think he's 28, and he works, you know, with insurance, and then also is in the guard or the reserve. I can't remember exactly. He's actually going to get deployed for a year, so they're going to have a little bit of a separation coming up. But anyway, Saturday, my wife said, "Oh, Rachel and Jacob are coming over for Easter supper, and then my wife's sister's in town, so she's coming too." So kind of last minute, made an Easter meal, and I made a little prime rib and some, I know because everybody has ham, but what do you do? Had a little prime rib and some Brussels with my special Brussels sprout recipe. I ate just a tiny bit because I'm still doing the carnivore diet, but I had to sample them, make sure they were okay. So I use olive oil, honey, and then chop up a bunch of bacon and bake those up. And they're very tasty. And then just some mashed potatoes. And my daughters I won't say there was an argument over who was supposed to be the primary mashed potato taster, but there was just discussion about it, let's just say, who was actually the more preeminent mashed potato tester. So nice, quiet little Easter at home. And Saturday I had the boys over again. This would be my daughter's boyfriend and a couple of his buddies over working in the yard. And we were moving rocks and putting down mulch. And so things are starting to look good. It's nice because I get these three kids that come over and they work for about three and a half hours. And that is more, obviously, we get done more than I could in a whole weekend by myself. So it's nice. And then they got a little change in their pocket and they're learning a little bit about work and seeing. It was interesting to see them kind of look up at what we had done, which was we did on the border of our fence with our neighbor. I have sort of it's just like a bunch of rocks that create a bed. So it's just some stacked bold, they're not even stacked, they're just like one layer of sort of big rocks, probably 10, 12 inches around. And over time, they had sort of sunk into the ground. So we just pulled those up and set them up a little higher and then put the weed cloth down and mulched it. And yeah, they were, I think, they're like, "Yeah, that looks pretty good, doesn't it?" Like, "Yes, boys, that does look good." And it's nice to, because I can remember doing that kind of work when I was that age. Nothing sort of that aesthetic until I got into college. So I did baling hay. And, you know, that was obviously hot work, but, you know, still at the end of the day, you see all those stacks of hay bales up in the barn. And that was kind of cool. But in college, I did my first summer in college, I did some roofing. Now, roofing in Oklahoma in the summer is an unpleasant job, I will say. We started early and we took an hour off in the dead heat of the day, but there's just no getting around. You're going to be up on a roof and Oklahoma summers are dramatically hotter than Iowa. Probably average 5 to 8 degrees hotter per day, and it's just so much muggier. At least in Tulsa, which is where I was working. But got that done, and you know, you learn when you're that age. It's so important to work, I think, and to get, you know, that experience of, first of all, this is how the world works. And then when you want to go buy your Starbucks, you kind of know how much it costs and what it takes you to, you know, did it take you an hour to buy that coffee? Well, not coffee, but, you know, they don't get coffee. They get these fancy drinks, which are $6, $7, $8 a piece. And I say, you know, it took you almost an hour to get that money. But it's good. It's good for the kids to work. It teaches them how the world works and gives them a little sense of autonomy and pride. My oldest is going to lifeguard again this summer, this time at the pool, more local to our house. So she'll be able to walk or ride her bike. And then my youngest is still looking. She has now checked. She checked at, there's an Asahi bowl place, Asahi of these berries that are supposed to be really good for you, and it's almost like a yogurt kind of situation. And then they were all full, so she tried an ice cream shop. So she likes to be in food preparation at places where they make sweet foods. And but that's okay, as long as they're working. It's a very interesting time, because my oldest is going to be a senior, and that's just, man, I don't know. It's when she's gone, then I'll have 2 years with my youngest, and then she'll be gone. And then that whole empty nest thing is, I mean, it's somewhat intimidating. On the one hand, it's like, yeah, well, at least on the weekend, we don't have to spend the entire weekend preparing for and getting their things taken care of, whether it be athletics or social. I mean, we basically spend our weekends making sure the kids are doing what they want to do, having a sleepover or taking them somewhere or going to a sporting event. So it'll be interesting to have our weekends back. But at the same time, I will miss them so dearly. My oldest is now talking about maybe wanting to go to Florida State, which I had no idea that Florida State is actually an excellent academic school. I knew Florida was, but I didn't know how good Florida State is. It's actually ranked quite high, I think 10th or 12th public university in America. So it's up there with, you know, North Carolina, UCLA, Michigan, places like that. It's just a slight tier below those, and I didn't really realize that. But, you know, Tallahassee, you know, and it'd be a fun place to go to school. Florida State football games would be great. They have good basketball. They're an hour from the beach. I get it, but it's a 4-hour drive to the nearest real airport. And then it's a one-stop flight home. So it's really, I mean, there's no weekends. There'd be zero weekends. There would be, she's going to come home Christmas and probably not spring break. I know I didn't go home spring break in college. So she can go home Christmas and maybe Thanksgiving, and then maybe she comes home for summer or not. So it's just, that would be a much bigger shock to the parents. And I think maybe it would be a bigger shock to her than she thinks it would be. But for us, it would be, I mean, you know, I've seen her, except for a few exceptions, every single day for the last 16 years. And man, well, it's just, it's a lot to think about. And I know a lot of you are either going through this or have gone through this. And, yeah, I guess I'll just have to keep on keeping on, because that's life. You give those kids up and send them out into the world ready to go. She's getting ready to take her ACT. I remember this time in my life, how exciting it was, that second semester of your junior year, when you're like, this is it. I've got 1 year left here and I'm off. And it is. It's a fantastic thing. It's a fantastic time. And I'm excited, but I'm still, it's bittersweet and maybe more bitter than sweet, but such is life. We just want them to be healthy and productive and satisfied and happy when they can manage that too. So Today, I wanted to talk about some of the different things in the shoulder that I don't really, you know, I talk a lot about rotator cuff repairs and smaller rotator cuff tears and larger rotator cuff tears and how we address those differently with the newer types of technologies that have been developed over the last few years. And again, now I have two separate patches. That'll be a different show. I can go over that again and talk about the difference, how my use of these rotator cuff repair patches has been evolving. I'll give you the quick synopsis of it is that there's a newer one that I think works better for bigger tears. It's a different material than the cow tendon patch that I had in my shoulder. And so I think there are some advantages to it, which I can go into more detail at another time, but there's advantage to it for bigger tears. For smaller tears, I still think the one that I had, the Regeniten, is probably the best way to go if you're just going to have that as a standalone procedure for a partial thickness rotator cuff tear. It just worked so great for me. I've seen it work so great for lots of patients. It's my right shoulder, which is the one that I had done, is now better than my left shoulder. And that is because, I mean, my left shoulder has deteriorated a little bit. I think I'm probably going to be getting an MRI of my left shoulder before too long. But right now, I'm still able to do everything I want to do in the gym. So I've not gone to that. When I start to like get to the point where, okay, I couldn't do this because my left shoulder hurt, like, you know, the upper body stuff I do in the gym, then I'll take that into consideration and get an MRI. Anyway, so some of the other things that can happen in the shoulder that I just don't talk a lot about, but I will. One primarily is a dislocation. So shoulder dislocation, the shoulder comes out of the socket. The shoulder socket is very, very different to the hip socket. The hip socket covers about half of the ball. They're both ball and socket joints. The hip socket covers about half of the ball. So there's a bony socket that goes around the ball about halfway. And that confers a tremendous amount of stability, right? But it also reduces range of motion a little bit just by inherently. I mean, you can just all the ways you can move your shoulder, and it's very clear that you can't do that with your hip. And that's because of, number one, you don't need to get it done. But that is because of the anatomy of the type of ball and socket joint that the hip is. And so in the shoulder, you have a very shallow socket, which covers very little of the humeral head. So the humeral head and then the glenoid is the socket. The glenoid is part of the scapula or the shoulder blade. Then you have a little lip, maybe another 3 millimeters of lip around it of soft cartilage called the labrum. Well, when you dislocate your shoulder, typically what will happen is that labrum will tear. And the interesting thing, and we don't know why this is, but if you are over 40 and you dislocate your shoulder, you have a much lower chance of dislocating it again. Just inherently. If you say, okay, so I see someone in the emergency room and they've had or in my office who had a first time dislocation. They fell, dislocated their shoulder. They're 58, let's say. They come in a sling. I check them out. I get an MRI to make sure they don't have a big rotator cuff tear. See, now rotator cuff tears can happen with shoulder dislocations and often do in older patients because the rotator cuff is significantly less strong in an older patient. And the labrum does tear. However, for whatever reason, if the rotator cuff doesn't tear, we just don't see a lot of recurrent dislocations in older patients. And I don't have a good anatomical reason for that. If you're 20 and you dislocate your shoulder, you almost certainly will not tear your rotator cuff. I've never seen one tear in a young patient like that in their 20s or 30s. Maybe someone in their late 30s, but typically the younger patient will tear the labrum off just like the older patient will. But that, for whatever reason, in a younger patient makes you a lot more vulnerable to re-dislocate. So the answer to a dislocation in an older patient, somebody say my age, would be to get an MRI, make sure the rotator cuff is intact, wear a sling for 6 weeks, and start therapy. For a younger patient, first time dislocator, you will have some surgeons who say fix it and some surgeons who say wait till the second time, because there would be, it's about a 40 to 50% chance that they will re-dislocate. And so you have to take a lot of into consideration. And so the answer is you repair the labrum, you just tack it down with some anchors and then tie it back to where it's supposed to be. And then the labrum is working again. Now, why, if you're 50%, you know, what are the arguments for fixing a labrum in a patient who has had a first-time dislocator and they're young? Well, if they're athletic and they dislocate and they're out the rest of the season, you have to tell them, okay, well, now you're at a sport that may or may not have a risk, it depends on the sport, of a redislocation. And if you redislocate it, you're going to miss another season. So sometimes it makes sense to just go ahead and fix it. And then, you know, if you had a young patient who says, you know, I don't really do a lot of athletic stuff, this was a freak accident, whatever, then you say, well, you know, maybe we'll just wait for the second time. Now, the second time, most people would offer the surgery, for sure. Again, to repair that labrum down to the bone. So that's a shoulder dislocation. Now, when the shoulder dislocates, the labrum tears at the bottom. If you're looking at the socket like a clock, the labrum's going to tear down at like the 4 to 6 position on the clock if you have a dislocation. Because 90% of dislocations go out what we call an anterior inferior. So it goes out the front and down. Very occasionally it'll go up when you dislocate, but that's a whole different thing and is a different type of a force vector. But it's mostly just comes basically straight forward and down a little bit. And again, in the younger patient, I'm going to think about fixing it the first time. I'm definitely going to suggest fixing it the second time. Older patient, you're definitely not going to fix it the first time if the rotator cuff's not torn. We're talking about shoulder dislocations now. But you could consider it on the second. But usually they don't have a second. So it's different. So the labrum, though, can tear at the top. It's called a slap tear. Slap means superior labrum. Superior means top, from anterior to posterior. And this can either be traumatic or degenerative, just like a rotator cuff tear. So the slap tear, that's the superior labrum, from anterior to posterior, there's two options to fix it. And you can tack the labrum down just like you would in a dislocation. But a lot of the studies that I've read, and I think the preponderance of the literature, is that if you cut the biceps, which attaches to the top of the labrum, the longer head of the biceps, and you tack it down into the groove where it lies, you're going to get better pain control and better ability to return to overhead activities in younger patients, overhead sports. But some people like labrum repairs. I repair the labrum if it's a traumatic dislocation. If it's a slap tear, the superior labrum from anterior to posterior, I mean, do a biceps tenodesis instead of tacking the labrum down. And I have reasons for that, one of which I think it's a less risky procedure. Number two, it has been shown to have a better rate of return of patients, of athletes, to their overhead sports. You know, talking volleyball, baseball, even to some extent basketball or football, position dependent. So there's a lot of different things that can happen in the shoulder that are just more subtle than and different to things that can happen in the knee. And it's just because of that architecture. And again, you have this shallow socket that has a little bit of soft tissue around it that deepens it, but you don't have a big bone holding socket like you do in the hip. And so that's kind of how we address. So there's one other thing in the shoulder that is pretty unique to the shoulder. You can also have a labrum tear in the hip. So there is that analogous thing too. The labrum tear in the hip does not cause you to dislocate. It does cause a lot of pain and clicking. And so then those are either repaired or cut off or those kind of things. I don't do hip arthroscopy. There's not a lot of people who do, actually. I think I'd be surprised if there's 10 surgeons in the state of Iowa that do hip arthroscopy. It's just kind of a specialized thing. You have to kind of do specialized training to do it. And it wasn't anything I was interested in, shoulder, knee. training when I did my fellowship. So, but those are kind of some things in the shoulder. We can go over more later as we are beginning to run out of time here. But once again, I hope everybody's having a wonderful spring. It's a great day to go out and get some exercise, some vitamin D with that sun, to eat some healthy food and improve your overall health and just take in creation and enjoy it. So with that, I'll be back next week, and you have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.